welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by Emily Lawler, Craig Mauger, and John Roerink. Bobby Shostak, the chair of the Michigan Republican Party, will be joining us over the phone in just a few minutes. But first, some subjects to talk about from the past week. The Michigan Democratic Party held a press conference. The subject, potholes. We're using potholes as a political issue here, Emily. Can you connect the bad roads to Rick Snyder?
You know, he's always been an advocate of this $1.1 billion increase in road funding. So, you know, I mean, you can make the argument that he hasn't been able to get it done. I'm not sure it's fair to call every pothole on the road Snyder holes, since under his plan, I'm sure a lot of them wouldn't have existed if the legislature had given this funding a year ago or when he wanted it.
But you can say that he's just been ineffective, and that's why we still don't have, now we're up to 1.3. Now he wants 1.3 billion. The road industry wants $2 billion. Is it because Snyder's been ineffective and Mark Schauer could actually get it done, Craig?
I don't know if that's the case, but I think the window is open for the D's on this for one reason, because last year Snyder was very out in front saying, I'm going to dedicate a huge chunk of my State of the State speech to this issue of road funding. We need this number. We need this to protect safety. We need this to fix our roads. And then we go to this year, when potholes are more of a problem, he doesn't really mention it in his State of the State speech. It's kind of a throwaway sentence during the budget presentation. And he says, I still want this number, but it's in this 90-page report somewhere that I want it, you know? So, I mean, I think the D's can hit him there. You know, you've changed your position. Maybe you say you haven't changed your position, but you're not putting it on the front burner as much as you did previously.
The D's can try to hit him with this issue, but I think that they are just as guilty of being responsible for not getting it done. Look, I mean, as you pointed out, he did build a State of the State address around the whole issue of the roads. He has been clamoring about it at every point he could without beginning to be a broken record. Democrats haven't stood up and said, we're partnering with the governor on this, and come on, Republicans, let's go. I think everybody in the legislature probably holds the bag on this thing more than the governor does, because I think the governor's hit this issue repeatedly and repeatedly and repeatedly.
I think the Democrats got him in a box on this, because the Republican legislature has prevented him from doing anything on it, but what would anything be? Anything would be raising taxes, right? So if he goes ahead and pushes the Republicans to go ahead and raise the gas tax, now all of a sudden you're a tax hiker to the middle class. Either you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't on the roads, and the best Snyder can do is say, hey, I've been trying to be a leader on this issue. We're making small progress. You got to stick with me. On the other hand, Republicans got to confront Schauer with, well, what would you do? And as somebody who's not in power, he can always do the fraud, waste, and abuse argument, right? Well, it's because we're not doing things right over the Department of Transportation, even though they've wrung the towel on that so many times, it's practically dry without even putting it on the line.
You know, the interesting calculation here is that we have this supplemental going on, and it's an opportunity for the legislature to say, look at all this money we're putting towards roads. Look at this priority we've made this. Mm-hmm. And it puts Snyder in an interesting position that he wants a long-term solution. This is not a long-term solution, but it's going to be a solution that looks good to a lot of people who are driving over potholes every day to work.
Well, and that's the headline you get, right, Emily? Hey, we just put money into potholes. Yeah. Whether it's $1 billion or $300 million, the person at home doesn't necessarily equate the dollar figure. They just know, oh, geez, Snyder signed money that's going to fill our potholes.
Yeah, and I think that benefits Snyder and the legislature, so it's not like he can forcefully say, you know, no, we want ongoing money, let's reject this however many million.
Turning the page here, John, Rebecca Warren, why did she not run for Congress?
I think a lot of people probably talked to her about being a Senate minority leader and convinced her that that's the role she should play, and it seemed like she was pretty close to deciding to run, but in the end she had to make that analysis, and I think she was convinced the other way.
I'm not convinced the numbers necessarily worked in her advantage here, Craig. I know that there's this idea that maybe Ann Arbor would have shown up stronger in a primary, but in Wayne County they do got an executive primary that's going to be pretty contentious, and there's a lot of people who live in that downriver area support Debbie Dingell. That would have been really hard for her to overcome.
Yeah, and I think the Dingell political machine really kind of smashed her on this one. I mean, from the beginning, the way they rolled out Debbie's campaign was excellent. I mean, having John on the day that he's retiring saying, you know, if I'm going to vote and Debbie runs, I'm voting for Debbie. I mean, right there, that just took a ton of support off the table that maybe Rebecca could have pursued if it wasn't rolled out in that way so early.
And then there was the drip, drip, drip of endorsements, too,
yeah,
which doesn't
amazing,
really
it's
help.
It's amazing the endorsements that were lining up behind Debbie from the very start.
Very nicely choreographed endorsement. Mm-hmm.
It really kind of maybe sucked a lot of energy out of Rebecca Warren's possibilities there. And then also, you know, you think about it, she has something to gain by keeping her name in the race. Maybe she gets some more money into the Senate Democratic efforts, maybe her leadership pack by cutting a deal. We don't know that for sure, but that's always a possibility. That's what happens in these kind of negotiations. And then at the end of the day, if we don't really have a credible opponent to Debbie Dingell, that helps the Democratic Party all around, because that means money isn't getting dumped into a competitive primary. That helps all the state, because now you have more money. The donors have more money for Mark Schauer and Gary Peters and, you know, these other congressional races. Let's say Pam Burns in that district, who's going to need some resources if she's going to beat Tim Walberg. And then let's move a little closer to state government here in the 13th Senate District, Emily. We had some polling done by Murray Communications last week that I wanted to highlight, because I think it really introduces an interesting dynamic into this race to succeed term-limited John Papageorge. We know who's in for sure, for sure, for sure. Tom McMillan is in. Chuck Moss is in. Rocky Raskowski has a web page and has already filed his campaign finance stuff, so you would presume that he's in. And now, what about Marty Nolenberg, former state rep? He was also a candidate for mayor in Troy. You start getting a lot of names in the mix here, Emily. What happens?
You know, the analysis that we've been hearing is that McMillan benefits the more people that get in this race, because he has a pretty strong base, and also, obviously, being a current representative, he's got a lot of name ID, at least in one area of the district. But the poll you mentioned had Marty Nolenberg really up there, and, you know, perhaps exaggeratedly so, but he has run a race, the Troy mayoral race, relatively recently, so his name ID could be pretty up there.
You know, this race involves some people who've got some significant name ID in that area. Rocky ran for Congress, Marty Nolenberg for mayor. Tom McMillan is known just because of his affiliation as a Tea Party, what would you call it, liberty person? I don't know. I mean, somebody who goes on both sides of the aisle on some issues when it comes to privacy type issues and right to know and transparency. What do you think of this race, Craig?
Oh, it's going to be very interesting. I think McMillan is very much a Justin Amash conservative, and he'll have a lot of followers. And if some of these other people are in the race and divide up kind of the more traditional Republican base, it provides kind of a window for McMillan to win. But then it also sets up this general election where if Tom McMillan is the Republican candidate, it's much more of a possibility that maybe the Democrats can hit him on some of his views that might be outside of the mainstream a little more, and it provides an opening for them.
Well, especially since the candidate who's emerging in that district for the Democrats, Ryan Fishman, is a young man, 25 years old, attorney, who's raising a ton of money comparatively for a district that really doesn't shape up very well for Democrats at all. They made that a lot more Republican in redistricting. It's now got a base around 55, 56, 57 on a good day for Republicans, John. That's not very good, but if you got Tom McMillan against a guy named Ryan Fishman, who used to be a Republican and now is a Democrat because he thinks the Democrats left him behind, this is a district Shirley Johnson held once upon a time.
It could very well be in play at the end of the day, depending on if it's McMillan.
And if it is, then all of a sudden that creates a kind of resource suck for the Senate Republicans. That takes money out of the Kalamazoo seat, which is going to be a knockdown, drag-out race. Saginaw is going to be super competitive. The Republicans see that as their, quote, 27th seat right there. And, you know, at the end of the day, that really could put a crunch on them.
All right, guys, good conversation. Let's go to the next part of the podcast. Joining me on the other end of the line, Michigan Republican Party Chairman Bobby Shostak. Thanks for joining me on the program, Chairman. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you. Thanks, Kel.
So late last week, the Democrats have rolled out a new line of attack against the governor, trying to attach him to the new potholes that are springing up on the roads all over Michigan. Is that a fair argument to say, hey, look at these potholes, drivers? It's because our governor hasn't provided leadership on this issue, and that's the reason why these things are going to be eating up your cars.
Well, look, I think Michigan roads have been a topic for decades, number one. Number two, we've had an unprecedented winter. Michigan drivers, Michigan citizens know that. The governor has a plan for roads. It needs to obviously go through the legislature. It's a complicated process in terms of the need to invest significant dollars in our roads and infrastructure on a long-term basis. Just trying to put forward not a short-term fix where money gets, you know, essentially poured into the roads every year and redone year by year. And make a long-term big investment, and he's got to work with the legislature to find the proper funding and source to do that, and he's anxious to do that, and I think you'll see him working on that this year.
You had a conference call maybe 15 minutes ago where you talked about the record of Mark Schauer, the Democratic candidate. What are some things that voters have to know about him?
Mark Schauer has no plan for the economy. He has no plan for education. He has no plan for job growth. All he has is criticism of Governor Snyder with no substance behind it. And the fact that he has been going after this education issue, claiming the governor's cut education, is just an outright lie. And the Michigan citizens, Michigan voters, need to know that's what kind of guy you got in Mark Schauer, who will say anything to try to get any message across that he thinks might resonate. And the fact is this governor has spent more on education, put more in education, any period in our state's history. In fact, has not cut but added dollars every year since being in office. Significant more dollars than when Schauer was at the side of Granholm as the Senate minority leader. I think the Michigan citizens need to know that the fact is really clear that Mark Schauer is not telling the truth. Mark Schauer does not have a plan for Michigan to continue Michigan's comeback. You know, basically the guy is a loser. He's got a one term in Congress. He had the largest single fine of any elected official in Michigan's history for campaign violations. So this is not the kind of leader, I think, or governor that Michigan citizens want.
Now, Mark Schauer was on the television not too long ago saying he would take care of the road funding and he would make that a top priority if elected.
Has he told us how? Has he given us a plan on how to get there? Does he even understand the complexity of the issue? I say no. That's okay. Why we're saying, what is your plan for roads? What is your plan for education? What is your plan for the economy? What is your plan to continue Michigan's comeback? Governor Snyder, on his watch, the unemployment has dropped 5 full percentage points. You know, personal income is up significantly, 3.5%. We continue to see reforms in every part of government. To make these claims with no substance behind it tells you what kind of individual, what kind of governor Schauer would be.
It's no secret that the Democrats have been using the phrase middle class consistently for the last year and a half, trying to talk about how their programs and what they want to do, their vision, would benefit people in the middle who live paycheck to paycheck, who are just good working folk. And as part of that is raising the minimum wage, that folks who are making $7.40, just barely scrapping by at the edge of poverty, should be given a boost and given $10 an hour. Do they have a winning issue here? Doesn't that appeal to a certain segment of the population who are bleeding hearts? Feel bad for folks who are just barely scraping by at $7.40.
Well, look, the governor, our legislature, the Republican Party, we all want to see Michigan citizens continue to see income growth and their quality of life improved. But this proposal isn't going to get them there. It is not responsible. It's nothing more than a power grab. It's not helping the middle class. You know, if you want to, you know, create jobs, you do it through innovation and you do it through less regulation. That's why under Governor Snyder, we've added 250,000 plus jobs, 14,000 manufacturing jobs. These are good middle class, middle income jobs. Income is growing. And so, you know, when they make this comment, you know, as soon as citizens understand, you know, the ramifications of legislating a wage on business, what it will mean to the risks to business and job growth, they will not support this. They will soon understand if this proposal goes to the ballot or goes to the legislature, they will soon understand what the cause and effect is of this proposal.
I heard you say power grab when you're talking about this minimum wage proposal. Who do you think is trying to gain power on this?
The Democrats.
Okay. Moving to the Republican side of things, do we have a date yet for the convention?
It's not been published, I don't believe, yet. It'll be obviously in August.
Okay.
But I don't believe the final date is out. I could double check that for you.
Going to the convention here, thinking about that, it looks like we're going to have a challenge for the lieutenant governor's race with Brian Kelly and at least Wes Nakagiri. Is that helpful to the Republican Party to have that kind of a challenge to the second in charge, a position that historically has just been decided pro forma to be the governor's choice?
Well, look, this is obviously a democracy we live in, and the people are free to run for office. The governor's partner should be someone I think that he is comfortable with. Lieutenant Governor Kelly is a strong conservative, been a great leader in our state. He's worked hard to support the programs that are necessary to reinvent Michigan and to continue Michigan's comeback. I think he's earned the support of the delegate community in August, and I suspect that he will get renominated by our convention. But, you know, it's a process that a few people have decided to take a look at, and we'll see if it actually goes through. Who knows with respect to these candidacies. In the meantime, Governor Snyder and Lieutenant Governor Kelly are out there doing the job that they were elected to do, and that's push Michigan's comeback forward at a great pace that they've been accomplishing all of this.
Now, I've also continued to receive emails and communications from the gentleman who ran against you for Michigan Republican Party chair last year, Todd Corser. He's got some polling out, or he's doing his own little polling. Do you think he's been helpful in the Republican Party effort in continuing to try and get Republicans in a position to win in November?
Look, Todd Corser's conducting himself in a way that he believes is effective. I don't believe him to be effective. We've got a job to do, and that's to identify and turn out the vote. And that's what every activist in our party is doing today, or should be doing. And if he wants to be helpful, he would be, jumping on board with that effort. Perhaps he is. But this noise back and forth, focus on me is, you know, fine. If that's what he wants to spend his time doing, then so be it. My focus is on making sure that our Republican majority is returned in November.
Give me your take on where the Tea Party is in Michigan right now.
I would say it's very supportive overall. There are factions out there that, you know, are more of a libertarian, you know, belief and thinking. So they're not necessarily going to be aligned with everything that the legislature and the governor puts forward. But I would say a high majority of Tea Party folks around the state, who I talk to, many of the Tea Party organizations, on a weekly basis, are in support of the governor. They're in support of the lieutenant governor. They want to see this comeback continue. Do they agree with everything that's been put forward in the last couple of years? No. Do they agree what percent that might be? I think some will tell you 80%, some will tell you 90%, some might say less. But regardless, I think they know they've got a great governor who's accomplished great things, and the legislature is putting forward great reforms in strong legislation after healthy debate, and creating Michigan a true comeback state of the nation.
Last question I wanted to ask you about. On Friday, I was given a little tutorial about your new technology that you guys are using at the Michigan Republican Party to help folks who want to go out and talk to their neighbors and make telephone calls about the Republican Party can get activated online. How effective do you think this is going to be in recruiting and getting folks to the polls in November?
This is a tremendous tool that we've developed, and frankly, it's becoming somewhat the talk of the country in Republican circles, Republican state parties across the nation, the RNC, and other organizations as well. We set forward last year, after the November 12 elections, to really create the Michigan Republican Party to be the leader in the nation in new technology, in voter identification, voter turnout, activist activity at levels that we've enjoyed in the past, but that we want to see dramatically enhanced. And this tool, My Team Dashboard, developed and designed by our activists, by our grassroots folks, our Tea Party members, our state party activists, our elected officials, were all at the table telling us back in February what it is that they felt we needed to going forward to build, design, and to have as our tool in the field. And as a result, with that input, we developed with CompuWare, now CW Services in Detroit, a tool that is smartphone-based, tablet-based, web-driven, that allows everyone in their individual precinct to become a precinct campaign captain so that they are literally on a very micro level working to identify likely voters, get in touch with them frequently, create their own groups rather than just get a walkbook with names from the state party. They can use their Facebook friends and various other social media tools that they have and make it part of this and reach out to those folks and include them in our emails and our newsletters and our messaging, conduct polls, conduct tests on messages, and help our candidates understand what the voters are seeking, what information they want in order to make a decision. And it really is the envy of the nation right now, because we took the initiative to get out there in front, ahead of everybody else, and get moving on this thing. And we're very proud of it.
And it's on your website if folks are interested in taking a look at it, right?
It is, yeah. It's migop.org, and then there's a button to click that'll take you to my team dashboard.
Very good. Bobby Shostak, Chair of the Michigan Republican Party. Appreciate the time today, Bobby.
Thank you, Kyle. Have a good day.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Bobby Shostak, also Craig Mauger, John Rurink, and Emily Lawler. And now Jacob has joined us here, too. Jacob, how many of those punchkis did you eat on Tuesday and Wednesday?
I think I had two. No, I didn't have any on Wednesday.
You didn't? Well, that was very good Catholic of you then. How about Thursday?
No, I think we were all dried up by then.
All the non-Catholics had eaten them up. I know Craig didn't touch the box from John Dingell, but I like those John Dingell ones, quite frankly. I thought those were the best ones, Emily.
I tried a custard one from there. It was good.
Were those the first time we've gotten John Dingell punchkis?
I've only been here for a couple years, but the first time.
I don't remember getting them before, but I'm glad that we made the list. It's kind of a bummer he's retiring. Maybe Debbie will keep the tradition going.
Oh, I just want to say, I don't want to leave Craig on an island. I also did not have the John Dingell punchkis.
Man, you guys are such J-school ethics. I'm going to tell your teachers back at State and Ohio U, man. They're going to be so proud of you.
One of the punchkis I brought was from home. It was an auxiliary punchkis, just in case we didn't have any here.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
I just, it was an emergency plan, just in case. I had to make sure I had my punchki.
Well,
anyway.
Lori will make sure we never go without a punchki on Fat Tuesday. That's for sure. Those things will be there just like the clock will strike five. And, you know, certain people will leave the office. We don't leave the office at five, I guess. Maybe that wasn't a good analogy.
Yeah.
I'll think of a better one later. Maybe I'll tack it on to the podcast at the end, right? Craig will make me think of a good take-home time.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, there we go. Time that we can leave. I don't know what time that would be, though. All right, until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.